You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Like, try not
to... And I'm not being filmed.
No.
So if I'm going to look at my notes, I'm completely okay with that.
You are 100% okay with that. Oh. I am totally going to be looking at my notes the whole time.
Okay, gotcha.
I can't memorize something for more than 5 minutes.
I just don't want to, you know...
Like a goldfish. Like, I've already forgotten who I'm talking to.
I feel like who Art Ed...
Try to spice it.
Who Art Ed? Mr. Wood, Art Ed, me.
Yeah. Either way, it's ambiguous. It works on so many levels.
I know.
That's off to a great start.
So today, I am joined by Jim Politis.
Hello.
One of my favorite teachers from the last decade that we've been working together. And we're going to be looking at the work of Alphonse Mucha. And I'm excited for this one because this was actually an artist I wasn't very familiar with beforehand, but you brought him to me because you said you like his work, right?
I very much like his work, and there's a number of reasons why. One is a family connection, and that's how I learned about him, because my wife is from Slovakia, and her parents... which was once Czechoslovakia,
yeah.
And her parents purchased these some posters from Mucha of the Four Seasons way back in 1967.
Yeah, and the Four Seasons is a pretty well-known series of his work from his Art Nouveau period. So now we're going to start with our first segment, which is going to be the In Situ segment, where we give a little bit of context to the art.
Now for our In Situ segment.
It just gives us some context.
It's about the artist and where this came from.
Where this all came from.
So the first thing to know is Alphonse Mucha was born in 1860, died in 1939. So that's the time period, late 19th, early 20th century is what we're talking about. And he is best known for his Art Nouveau posters. He made advertisements, illustrations, decorative panels, jewelry, etc. But he really became best known for his posters of the French actress Sarah Bernhardt. When he was living in Paris, he was commissioned to make posters for her. Later in his career, he created what he considered to be his most important work, which was the Slav Epic. That was, I think it was 20 canvases. And when I say canvases, they are giant. Mm-hmm. They are mural-sized canvases that are showing sort of the history of the Slavic people. And he spent, I think it was like 10, 12, I should actually look it up. He spent 14 years on that. He started it in 1912 and finished it in 1926. 2 years later, he presented it to the Republic of Czechoslovakia on the 10th year anniversary of the country's independence. And while he considered that historical painting his most significant work, he is, as I said, best known for his Art Nouveau. I always find it interesting looking at like artists and how sometimes it seems like they kind of miss the mark on their own significance. Because he said, you know, what is Art Nouveau? Art can never be new. Which I find like an interesting statement, you know, when you think about like art can never be new. Because like when I think of art, I don't know about you, but I always think of art is always new. Like, I think that's, like, definitive of it.
Well, to me, art is always new, and it's not only new, but it's a reflection of the actual time in history. And yeah. Whether the artist even knows that, they're still reflecting that period.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that interests me about him, too, is that Slavic epic that he tried to portray, then it wasn't real successful till later on.
Well, it was...
It wasn't accepted by the Slavs as much as it should have been, because it...
Yeah.
However, it is now. It is much now.
Yeah, I mean, in his time, he wasn't, you know, his fame sort of, it had peaks and troughs, but you're right. In his time, that Slav epic wasn't as acclaimed as it is today. Just like towards the end of his career, he was seen as sort of out of fashion. But then like 20 years later, his work was hugely influential in like the 1960s, the counterculture and sort of the psychedelic artists. A lot of psychedelic posters and stuff that the hippies were making. It was very, very much like directly drawn from Art Nouveau. In some ways, actually like copying the contours, but changing the colors. As well as obviously some other embellishments to, you know, put Jimi Hendrix on there instead of, you know, the whatever company was being advertised. I don't want to be buzz marketing for any products that might have gone out of business 100 years ago. And
the people that lived the bohemian lifestyle, they would see that this is exactly a reflection of that. And I think that's why the 60s adopted it, because the hippie movement, which is now quasi-bohemian lifestyle, is really an offshoot of that, and he reflects it perfectly.
Yeah, and I think also one of the common threads there was like Art Nouveau also came at a time of social upheaval, just like the hippie counterculture movement came at a time of social upheaval. The social upheaval happening in the Art Nouveau period, you know, late 19th, early 20th century, that's the time of the Industrial Revolution. That is the time when steam and coal are powering everything in ways that are new and frankly scary to some people. Like, you know, it's roughly the same time period as the Luddites, who were, you know, railing against the machinery and saying that, you know, they need skilled weavers to be operating these steam-powered looms and things like that, not just anybody off the street, because it was a threat to their livelihood. But also a lot of artists had this reaction to it, looking at all that new technology, which was very geometric and steel and glass, and in a lot of ways, in a lot of views, sort of hyper-masculine, just driving forward and relentless. And they thought it was ugly. And so like the Art Nouveau was in some ways... you know, it's funny that they call it Art Nouveau, because Art Nouveau literally means new art. But in some ways, it was looking backwards. It was going back to this idealized sort of notions of beauty being very organic, and we see a lot of sort of botanical imagery, a lot of plants and,
absolutely,
you know, floral patterns and designs, very elaborate and intricate. Which is some ways railing against the sort of stark and simplistic modernist tendencies that were happening at that time.
That's one of the things that really impresses me too, is I'm huge on color. I love Monet because it's so bright, but Mucha's not like that. Mucha's colors, it's almost like you think, wow, did this fade? Because they're so soft, but all the colors, even the reds, are earthy.
Yeah.
And so it's a natural, it's like nature, he puts nature down on the canvas or whatever.
Yeah. He absolutely is putting nature in there. And you're right, it is an earthy feel to it. There is a softness to it that I think part of the reason he was so successful is because it was a breath of fresh air. The piece that we're going to be looking at in a minute, I think it was one of the first ones that was commissioned by Sarah Bernhardt, an actress. And she wanted this poster that was going to be advertising an extended run of her play. And it was around Christmas time. And she wanted the posters to be done by January 1st. She calls up the publishing house, and Mucha just happened to be there, from what I've read and what I understand. He just happened to be there checking on the proofs for some of his other prints. The proofs are sort of like the first run where the artist will check them out before they print 1,000 copies of it. They want to make sure the first test print goes well. So he's looking at them and doing some corrections. And because it's the holidays, there aren't a lot of artists in-house that are able to take this job. But Mucha was there, and Mucha had done illustrations of Sarah Bernhardt in the past, because he was doing some commercial work. He had done some illustrations for magazines and stuff like that. So he was able to knock out this drawing. on a pretty tight deadline. And he made a larger than life size drawing, like I think it was over 2 meters tall. I'm just a little over 6 feet tall. So it was about as tall as I am, maybe a little bit higher than that. And it was just stunning to people. You know, most advertising is so bright and vibrant to grab your attention. It's sort of visually yelling at you. And when you see that poster that is large and organic and flowing and soft and natural,
it draws you in.
It draws you in.
It's warm.
It's a break from the chaos that is all around, especially at that time. Like I say, that was a time of tremendous change.
Steel,
to people's
machinery, yes, gears, oil,
yeah,
all this hard, loud noises,
yes,
and none of it is loud. It's all,
yeah,
soft. Yeah.
And so it immediately became sort of a sensation in Paris as those posters went up. The actress, Sarah Bernhardt, she ordered a run of like 4,000 copies of that poster. And she commissioned him, put him on a contract to work for her, making her posters for 6 years after that.
Yes.
And she would print up thousands of these posters. And she actually held some back because she knew collectors would want them. Like, she immediately recognized the marketability of this work, as others did as well. Like I said, he quickly rose to prominence and became famous. And aside from working for her, he got commissioned and put on under contract at publishing houses. They wanted to just buy they wanted the rights to everything that he was making for years after that. And so that's where he built up his fame and his prestige and a bit of a personal fortune that gave him that leeway to spend, I think it was 13 or 14 years, making that Slav epic, the passion piece that he had, that he later, you know, just gave to his homeland.
That's why I truly appreciate his work, too, is because it enabled, and I think this was what he was happy for, too, is that it gave the common man an opportunity to have beautiful pieces of art within his home that he normally, before that, could not afford. You either had to have an oil or something that was done by hand by an artist, and only the wealthy could afford that.
This is what I see as the beginning of breaking down that barrier between high art and low art, commercial and fine art.
And the class system. It breaks down the class system.
And it set the stage, I think, to a lot of things that over the 100 years to come, really were transformational. Like, I see this in a lot of ways as a predecessor to like Andy Warhol and Keith Haring and those other artists who were living in the gallery world, but also doing things that was mass produced and more accessible. And Keith Haring specifically, I love, but I think we've got enough for the background there.
Okay.
So now we're going to shift to the in gallery segment.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Calm Cove podcast can help you sleep deeply all night long. Calm Cove has deeply relaxing meditation music and ambient sounds, like ocean waves and crackling fires. All of our episodes are designed to help you relax and to fall asleep fast. Calm Cove is brought to you by the team behind Sleep Cove, the sleep podcast that consists of spoken word hypnosis, meditation, and stories. So if you want to listen to a beautiful soundscape tonight, search for Calm Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see how we're helping millions of people relax and go to sleep every night. Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Sleep Cove podcast can help you. Hi, I'm Christopher Fitton, the voice and clinical hypnotherapist behind Sleep Cove. Sleep Cove features sleep hypnosis, meditations, and bedtime stories, all designed to help those of you who struggle at night to achieve a restful and peaceful night's sleep. Search for Sleep Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see why Sleep Cove helps millions of people sleep deeply all night long.
Now for our in-gallery segment, we're going to have a discussion looking more carefully at one piece. We're going to look closely at the poster that really launched his career. This is a poster for the actress Sarah Bernhardt for an extension of her play
Desmonda.
Desmonda,
yes.
Yeah, Desmonda. I'm just trying to keep with my precedent of mispronouncing everything from a foreign culture. That's what I've done on pretty much every episode.
Yeah, when the first time I wanted to tell my mother-in-law that I loved her, I actually said, "I'm in love with you." And she didn't know what to say. So, you know, I can understand. You know, it's just language is difficult.
Language is hard. I can barely keep up in English. So I think it's always helpful to start by just looking at and identifying, like, what are we seeing here? What's jumping out to you visually about this piece? What are you seeing?
What I see is the beautiful floral arrangement colored on her robe or her dress.
Yeah.
And the warm colors. It's like the first time I saw Mooka, I thought, oh my gosh, I wish it was brighter. Because like I said, I'm really big in the color, you know. But then I realized, no, this is exactly what nature is. Nature, that's why everyone wants to take pictures of flowers when they're in full bloom. But when you look at flowers in the fall, late fall, that brown and dark green is just as beautiful. It's just different.
Yeah.
And so his colors are that warm feeling. They don't jump out. They don't burn your retina. They're inviting.
Yeah, it's almost sort of sepia tones. It's these like earthy, warm browns, oranges, some pinks. It's soft pastel colors. And I do feel like that's, like I say, it's almost like sepia tones. It has that nostalgic, like worn feel.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it was new, it felt a little bit old. Like as I'm looking at that dress, that it is a gown that feels draped over her, but it is a costume that it feels ancient. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
it feels like she's taking on this ancient persona. Like there's this Byzantine sort of feel to all of this with the elaborate floral patterns. It's almost like a mosaic above her in terms of the way that the font is created. Everything about it feels like it is referencing old, like it feels like it should be a tapestry or a scroll or something like that, because it feels like it is this sort of neoclassical. It's like it's all this look back and nostalgic feel. We see her name. Her name is probably one of the highest bits of contrast as we look at that shock of white lettering surrounded by like the oranges and reds. And it's forming this arc almost like a halo over her head. That sort of reinforces that silhouette as our main focal point. And we see her wearing this almost like crown of flowers. And that floral motif is repeated in the like palm frond that she's holding and the floral pattern that leads down the dress that also feels like it has like a shawl almost, you know, draping down the sides.
It's almost like a goddess. If there was a goddess, that's what.
Yeah.
A nature goddess. That's what she'd be wearing.
Yeah. There's this almost like ancient Greek or Roman, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's
like she feels like she's coming from mythology.
And he sneaks some blue in also that is perfect, goes perfect with those browns and golds and yellows and peach color.
Yeah.
And it's just perfect. But because it doesn't, you'd think blue could overwhelm those warm colors, but it doesn't. It fits in perfectly.
The other thing I'm struck by is just the spectacular draftsmanship. I mean, the way that he has rendered her, it's like he's using every line he needs and nothing extra. Like, as ornate and detailed as it is, there's nothing that feels superfluous. The line that he draws, there's this elegance to it. And the way that he shifts the weight of the line or the thickness of the line, some are heavy, some are thinner and softer. Mm-hmm. And he does that masterfully.
And the other thing that really attracted me to Mooka is if you look at all the seasons are women, and much of his work has women in it. And if you really have to study their face. A lot of times, my wife Ava and I, will look at paintings of peasants and we'll try to imagine what they're thinking. So if you look at all the women that he portrays, they're all beautiful. They don't, their face does not overwhelm all the art. They're not so beautiful that that's the focus. But if you look at them, it's like they're in a state of thought, and they're not telling you what that thought is. You could imagine many things. So I invite anybody who looks into a lot of Mooka's work, look at the women's faces. It's very interesting. You can see many things within that face, and that's what's really fascinating about it. Obviously, he loved women because a lot of his work was women, and I think that attracted me to it. Sorry.
No, but I also think, you know, as you talk about like his repetition of the female form as the subject matter, I think it is worth mentioning in our 21st century lens, we often see like a man who is constantly drawing and painting women as objectifying women and leering, and you know, there's something gross about it. The way we think of like Gauguin felt very gross. Like I refuse to even teach about him. Yeah. The thing that strikes me about Mooka, which is very different, is Mooka, like a lot of Art Nouveau artists, he was focused on the female form as sort of symbolic of softness and beauty, and a contrast, like I said, to the hyper-masculine machinery, steel, glass, geometric, linear forms. And so while I think there probably could be a reasonably strong feminist critique of some of this work, I think also just in that historical context, you have to realize it wasn't perceived that same way. And I see the problematic aspects of it. I don't want to deny that. But I also think it's not of the same nature that I would put like Gauguin running off to Tahiti to sort of paint his fantasies of indigenous people and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't think it's objectifying women in the same way. I mean, here he is painting his patron. She commissioned him. And that's one of those reasons that I always start off with that background, that context information, because if I saw he painted a lot of posters of women, I'd say like,
well, that's the difficult thing about
male gaze, but like, well, he was commissioned to paint her.
Right.
She wanted him to paint her. She
exactly.
Hired her.
And I think I never looked at it as he was making objects out of women.
Yeah.
I take it. And everybody takes something different when they look at a piece of art, but I take it as an honor. He's honoring women.
But also, like I say, he was working for a woman. He was doing this for a woman who was a pretty strong and industrious business person and very savvy in her own right. Yeah. She would have those posters printed, but then hold back some because she knew there was a market for collectors. And, you know, I think that's one of those things that the more you look into it, the more you realize there's more than meets the eye.
There's emotion there. There's a lot there, but it's not... They're not just
still waters run deep, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
There's
exactly.
like that ambiguity.
It's just like his colors. They're very deep, but yet they're very, you know, very laid back and mellow.
Well, and you know, it's...
The intricate patterns are...
Well, and we're going way too long on this, but it's hard not to, because there's so much to unpack there. And that's part of what I really like about it, is at first you look at it as this, okay, there's a nice looking poster. But then you start to notice there's so much detail. There's so much that is very meticulously rendered, very carefully thought out. There is a little bit of ambiguity to the pose, to the facial expression. And that doesn't happen by accident. And I think part of the reason it's, you know, it's kind of like that Mona Lisa smile where it's like there's just that little bit that's off, where it's like there's a subtle illusion there that is not like, it's not beating you over the head the way like Picasso's old guitarist is like, okay, we're seeing a street performer. This is sad. He's emaciated. We get it. You know,
right.
There's like, there's nuance to this. There are layers of meaning to this that I think, make it more captivating.
I think that's what makes art great, is that when you can bring many different things out of it, and a lot of depends on how you're going in.
So I always like to wrap my in gallery segment with, if you could take this out of the galleries, if you, you know, had this poster, where should this hang?
Well, first of all, it would go in my classroom. It would be great in my classroom. It's in,
take it for yourself.
Yes. This poster would be great to add to my home because I've got the Four Seasons there. I think you can put it in any bohemian clothing shop. And I think it could go on a t-shirt, honestly.
So you just want it everywhere.
Man. Yeah, I just think it's beautiful. It just gives a warm feeling. There's nothing, like sometimes things jump out at you and they're like, oh, you know. I'm never out of the mood to look at his work because it doesn't hurt. It never hurts.
Yeah.
It kind of provides what you want, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what I like about it. So I think she can make a tattoo if you want to find somebody that could, honestly, I mean,
that'd be a hard tattoo.
You'd be there for days, but it would be quite a nice tattoo. But anyway.
I always like that unexpected stuff. Although I would say along similar lines, like I look at this and I think like I would put this up in a cafe.
Yes.
Because this feels just so much like for a place where you want to sit and relax and like it's just... It's soothing. It is.
This is soothing.
It's
a
very
good
vanilla
cup of tea
kind of
or
just
coffee.
Like
yes,
relax
yes.
And you know.
It's a baguette with some cheese. It's
enjoy,
it's exactly.
Enjoy your coffee or you know.
Yeah, it's not.
Whatever.
It's not
kind
a T-bone. It's not a T-bone
into.
Kind of picture. No.
Yeah.
And now for our in studio segment.
In studio.
Think about what strategies are working.
Take it.
Good
make
artists.
It your own.
Copy.
Great artists. Steal.
Just go ahead. Steal this
and
art.
Make it your own.
These are the takeaways. This is what you can apply to your own work. You and I can just go back and forth sharing our takeaways from this piece and what we would do for ourselves or recommend to others in order to make better artwork based on what we can learn from Mooka. So do you want to go first or shall I?
I can go, I think. I think what I get from this is back to nature, to honor the earth and honor the beauty and honor everything around you and don't take what you don't need. And that's what I take away from this art, and that's what attracts me to it.
You never got out of the 60s, did you?
I never have. But you know what? I looked up Bohemian today, and you know what?
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that, you know, because it's all about freedom and flowing, and we don't hurt anybody. We try not to hurt anybody. We're humans, but we try not to hurt anybody. And that's the way I take his art, is it's soft.
And that's something that I think I would also have as a takeaway is that, you know, one of the things about Art Nouveau was they said, we just want to make things that are beautiful. You know, progress is great, but also appreciate the aesthetics because the way that something looks conveys a feeling and it makes us embrace something or shy away from it. And, you know, it's like I love Apple computers because they put a lot of thought into the design that makes it the computer that is not intimidating for the rest of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I never learned that much about ones and zeros. My brother knew all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think designing something that just makes people feel good is worthwhile. Like, there's so much... Even Mooka himself talked about historical importance and stuff, but what's historically important and what was lasting was the stuff that's just celebrating beauty.
Yes, and nature.
And making people feel good.
I think that
people can rest and breathe and relax.
And the more we embrace the modern world, whether it be the Industrial Revolution or the Technology Revolution, the more we always have to remember nature, the outdoors, the things that are important. Like it's great to have an Apple computer or any computer and master it and do all these really great things with it, but it's also great to take a walk in the woods. And so we have to keep that in mind too. And just like I think he was trying to do with during the Industrial Revolution is to remember the beauty of nature. We have to, we always have to return back to that.
Because the Industrial Revolution did kill nature.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And I think that's why it's important that
we bring it back
because it's really coming to the brink again. And everything's cyclical. And so we have to remember that we are the earth, and we have to keep it healthy, just like we have to keep our minds healthy. And just have, or, we have to expand our minds with the technology that's available.
Or we can start to see the beauty of living on a plastic garbage island.
Exactly.
In the ocean.
That's exactly right.
So I guess my next takeaway is, you know, he's got a lot of intricate detail here. And he paid a lot of attention to what we call the weight of lines, which is sort of how heavy or thick certain lines are. And if you look carefully at this, we see some things are very heavily outlined, like the edge of her dress. And then some of these things have much thinner, softer lines that differentiate things. And it's a good thing to have that variety and pay attention to what type of line are you putting down. You want those heavy lines to emphasize the biggest, most important parts, but you don't want everything to be cranked up to 11. You know
exactly.
What I mean? You want some things to be softer and lighter and sort of that breath of fresh air, and it's that variety that keeps things interesting. Anything else you want to share?
No, I hope that everyone gets a chance to just Google him and look at some of his work.
And my last takeaway is going to be that when we incorporate text into the image, it is really important that writing be artistically done. I've seen so many times where I've seen beautiful drawings that students then start to label parts, and it's just done in their normal handwriting, and it doesn't fit in with the rest of the mm-hmm. piece. And text is very difficult to get unified so it fits in with everything else. But Mooka did that wonderfully, and I think the strategy he used that was very effective was he drew this bounding box, like he drew that arc and then stretched the letters to fit that arc. And he thought about what kind of font, that sort of curvy, wavy, a little bit organic font, is going to fit in with the curvy sort of organic shapes of the dress, of the palm frond, of the flowers, of everything else. It all is tied together. If you're going to incorporate text, make sure it is drawn the way everything else is. Start by planning the size of it. Where is it going to be? How does it fit into the rest of the composition? And then draw it, color it, make it artful, not just your normal handwriting.
I think you've come up with a natural lesson right here.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate your taking the time.
I appreciate you asking me. This is fun. It was fun.
Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
Podcast done.
Never Thanks, know. Man. That was kind of fun. I hope I didn't talk too much, or I hope I didn't interrupt, because